Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Guitar Nerds is sponsored by Music Nomad, our favorite guitar maintenance tool manufacturing masters. You should check them out on musicnomadcare.com or on social media with @musicnomadcare. Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Naomi McLeod.
Hello, 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 hello.
Hello, hello, Naomi. Hello, dear listener. Welcome back. Welcome back to another episode. Episode 19 in season 3. And it's the two of us. So naturally, I think we're going to end up talking about more bass-related things this week.
Indeed. I said several hellos to make up for the lack of
other guests. Other,
yeah. I mean, is it a lack of others or is it an abundance of the two of us? Who knows, really?
Yeah, exactly. This is definitely better. This is better than having all the others are just dead weight mostly. Well, JD's away on tour. He's touring in the US. Matt is on holiday. Ooh. And Jay is recovering from Dan Grace from Squire's stag do. So that's where the rest of the hosts are at. Oh, but yes, I too am actually recovering, of course, because it's been a hectic few weeks for me. I keep having things. I really need to move because, dear listener, we do the podcast. We record it on a Monday night, and I feel like I should move that because I've had some heavy weekends. We had the Birmingham Guitar Show. I had Portals Festival, which we spoke about last week. And then this week, I was at a friend of both Naomi and my friends Marty and Zoe. They were getting married up in Burrow on the Hill, which is some
what a name,
a very very sort of country manor-esque part of the Midlands, believe it or not. There are some nice bits of the Midlands, apparently. Who knew? Not me. but yes, we're up there because Marty is a prolific organizer of events, and Zoe is a prolific goer too of musical events, and apparently Polymath, my band, one of her favorite bands, which is very weird. And Marty, we've known for years. He's been putting on my band. We've been doing tours with him for over a decade. So they had Polymath play their wedding, which is rather weird.
Listeners. Certainly quite the compliment.
Yeah, it was
of any band, let alone, you know, your band.
Exactly.
That's not a comment on the other guys. Just you. No, just you. That's an ace compliment.
Oh, yes. We were honoured to get the option to do it. But of course, I've never been to a wedding where there's been instrumental prog as the main band for the evening. So it's definitely going to be very particular. But it was a very friend-loaded wedding. Certainly there were family there for the earlier part of the day. But I think very much they made it so, you know, by the time the band played, it was going to be for friends and stuff. But it was wonderful. When we were playing, they had Marty and Zoe were being crowd surfed around. It was lots of fun.
Were they being wholesomely like, was it Was it how standard a crowd surfing affair are we talking here? Like, did all of Zoe's I assume beautiful wedding dress survive? I'm just basing it on crowd surfing that I've seen over the years.
I feel that she dressed with in mind that she would probably be moshing around for the evening. So
amazing.
So the dress could certainly was able to take being picked up by a whole bunch of people and thrown around in the air. But it was
fabulous. Do you notice how I'm not worried about Marty at all? he has asserted himself as particularly sturdy for imagine most crowd surfing eventualities. Yeah. That sounds amazing. So you didn't do you didn't like break out a polymath version of Proud Mary or any of those things?
There was no like Mr. Brightside but instrumental prog versions. No. we did do Zoe's favorite song. We got Marty to tell us what her favorite song was, and fortunately it was an easy one. It was and a good one as well. We didn't really want to cover anything that was bad, but Zoe has excellent taste in music. Her favorite song turned out to be Glory Box by Portishead. So
amazing.
Yeah, two things, great, super easy, same bassline the whole way through, but easy to give your own sort of lilt to it.
Yes, gotcha.
So I mean, even Portishead themselves, if you watch live videos, the live version of that song is very different from the recorded version.
Was she there for it? Because if I've learned one thing in many years of function band playing, it's trying to get the intended person to be there for their song.
I feel
and
like
sometimes having to wait the whole set while our bridesmaid is running around trying to catch the errant bride.
I feel like I was more worried about this than anyone else. I very much like, just before we went on, I went to Marty and I was like, look, we're going to do this cover, but I'm going to put it somewhere in the set where you guys are there. So, you know, maybe if you want to turn up towards the end, or if you think you just want to watch the first couple of songs, I'll put it in early. And he was like, Joe, he's from Northern Ireland. So he was like, Joe, we're going to be there for the whole set. and they very much were. They were right at the front. And in fact, everyone was there for the whole set. It was lovely. You know, there was definitely that fear that it's like an instrumental prog band playing this wedding. I know Marty and Zoe think this is a good idea right now, but when it actually comes down to it, is everyone just going to want to be at the bar getting pissed? You know, we weren't sure which way it was going to go. It turned out fantastically. We were double worried because there was another band. There was a band on before us, and it was the Best Man Todd's Pirate Bluegrass Band.
Oh, that sounds like great fun.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the three people that watched them for the bulk of the set really enjoyed it, but it definitely filled us with fear that no one was going to watch it. I think just no one wanted to watch Pirate Bluegrass, but it was also they were on earlier in the night, you know.
I was going to say you can get lucky or unlucky sometimes with time and then throw a wedding into that circumstance mix, and who knows, you could be Meshuggah and it could not be the taste of absolutely everyone at the wedding. Well, it sounds like you had a great set anyway.
It was wonderful.
Sounds like
it was
a great wedding was had by all.
It was indeed fantastic. Yeah, so at the end of the set, like I jumped into the crowd. I was playing bass on top of my head for the whole sort of last big riff, and then I sort of like my bass sort of got passed, you know, because I was in the crowd, it got sort of passed overhead. And I was like, that's fine. That doesn't matter. And then a couple of seconds later, I saw it being carried around by our friend, Naomi Kerry Funnel, the bass player from No Violet.
Yes.
As I have, fantastic bass player, an amazing band.
Kerry really is an ace player.
Yeah, and I've spoken about that band a whole bunch, dear listener, on this podcast. They're such a good band. You must check them out if you haven't already.
Yeah.
Just wonderful modern adaptation of grunge. Ellie, the singer and guitarist, plays a jagstang, and I just think tonally, she's incredible. Vocally, she's incredible.
Vocally, she's pure power.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. And Kerry Funnel as a bass player is just everything you want in a bass player for that sort of thing. So brilliantly driving and supportive, always playing the right thing. But also, massively.
Take us back to this moment, because you seem to be implying great concern that your bass had ended up in this moment in her hands.
We'd been there since midday.
Okay. Part of me wants to say no more, because as an Irish person, I definitely get what that can mean. But exactly. Go on.
And this was what, like 10, half 10 by this point. At night. So we've been there since midday. And around 3 o'clock, Kerry Funnel was being carried around on someone's back whilst drinking silver tequila from a bottle. So I need to really emphasise the condition that she was in. And she is very good at getting very drunk very quickly. So that was very scary. And she put the bass on and then just ran around with it for some time.
Oh, God. Okay. Yeah, she is. I forget if it's imp or sprite is the better word for this, but yeah, to be very clear to anyone listening, she's an incredibly pleasant and funny and wonderful human being, but decidedly impish drunk is probably the term. Yes. Amazing. So I assume you got it back safe, because I feel like you'd still be crying had you not.
Just about, yeah. I got it back safe, which is good. Nice. It was my, I'm playing my 60s Sunburst jazz bass. I really like that jazz bass. The lacquer finish, it was so Mexican made, part of the 60s, the old 60s range, but they did them for a brief period. They did them in tweed hard cases with a lacquer finish. It was very cool. So I was playing that, and I've started to, after gigs, drag my bass around in order to get a little bit of extra relicking. So I wasn't too fussed about that.
Drag it around. So yeah, what, like later on in your set, drag it around?
No, just when I'm finished, I'll drag it from the stage to wherever I'm packing up.
Oh, wow.
I had to do it this time.
Relicking.
I had to go the whole way across like the outside of the marquee. So I had to like drag it across concrete. And it really bounced around when I was doing that. So I think I've done some decent relicky damage to it.
That's an approach I'd never heard before.
Well, there you go.
I feel like you're potentially demystifying some of my questions about Fender's relicking process that I used to ask every new Flea signature jazz bass that would come into my old store.
Ah, yes, of course.
Which, how did they do this to you?
Incidentally, that Flea signature jazz bass is the bass that Kerry Funnel plays in No Violet.
It is. Perhaps that was why it was on my mind just there.
There you go.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
And yeah, that was another thing that you did recently was strange form. So you've had, what, 4-5 weekends of absolute maximum?
Yeah, maximum.
Joe Branton, Ranton, Marty party time.
Yes, exactly. I have.
You've gotten good value out of the last 4 or 5 weeks. What have I done? I've had COVID and then felt tired.
Yes, you've been having a super slow COVID recovery.
Yeah, I really have. This what we're listening to, well, what we're doing right now and what you're listening to right now is the highlight of my week. So,
I mean, I say that
I've been on reverb, haven't I? I've been looking at basses that I shouldn't be looking at, but
which is something we should talk about, because I think I think a few weeks ago, I don't know, like maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago on the podcast, I feel like I pointed a particular bass out to you that I was thinking about getting, and ultimately I decided it's not for me, but it's still there, and since then it has come down in price.
Yes, Yes, it has indeed. It is a Reverend Triad bass in... It's a green burst, but I really wish I knew its official full name and surname, the finish. But it's, yeah, a beautiful green burst. And I think at the time, did we talk about that you maybe weren't so pushed on the finish? And I was saying, I'm actually quite into it.
I think like the finish partially because I think it's got a Burnsy feel to it. So it has that sort of 60s vibe to it.
Yeah, very much.
I really like Reverend stuff, and the Triad is the bass that appeals to me most out of their range because, you know, it's for application in a band because it's a 34-inch scale.
Mm-hmm.
It's a jazz bass style instrument, dear listener. It has three bladed
jazz bass bomb pickups.
Exactly. So super versatility, but with all the sounds that you want from, you know, an ordinary jazz bass. And it'll also do that P-style thing as well, because those are humbucking pickups. So you could lock it down to just the one neck pickup and get a great P sound as well. It's kind of got all the right features. But for me, I feel like it's a bit too much of a smorgasbord of everything. It's got that finish is very Burnsy. The blades on the pickups make the pickups look very modern. But then it has binding, which is kind of Gibson-y. It's got an offset feel to it. But then it also has a Tele-style control plate, and then it has block inlays. It feels like it just has everything. There's a feature there from every type of instrument, and for me it's maybe a touch too much. I want it to commit to a look and stick to it rather than being a bit of everything. But you're really into this.
Time has come on this week's podcast to hear some gear, so let's check out some of the complete guitar amplification and effect solutions available from Neural DSP and their plugins. We've teamed up with Neural DSP a bunch over the last year or two. Matt and I are big fans of what they do, and we'd like you to become part of that. So use discount code GUITARNERDS at neuraldsp.com for 30% off, a whopping 30% off any of their plugins. Worth noting, you get a 14-day free trial with any of their plugins with no credit card required. So if you just want to see what all the fuss is about, you've got a whole 2 weeks on them with any of their amps and effects. Now this week I'm checking out the Pliny plugin suite. Pliny is one of the most innovative and refreshing electric guitarists of our generation. His distinct sound combines an unusually wide variety of styles, progressive, fusion and metal, all with impressive fluency and elegance. Neural DSP designed these plug-in amps a bit differently for Pliny. They engineered his dream amps and effects from the ground up to perfectly cover the vast dynamic tonal range that his music requires. These amp designs were then obsessively modeled with extreme accuracy. The result is three refreshingly new amplifiers, a crystal clear clean, a tight and articulate rhythm amp, and a powerful and defined lead amp. Virtual amplifiers that are not only unique but can also excel in their styles. Here's a track I built using only presets from the Pliny suite and a bit of synth in there and drums. Perfect for elegant soundscape tones, super cleans, and some great 80s lead tones too. neuraldsp.com and use discount code GUITARNERDS at the checkout for 30% off any of their amp and effects plugins.
I feel like I hear your points, but I don't necessarily accept your points.
Right, of course.
I hadn't really taken in the sort of smorgasbord fact of it. And I do agree, yeah, that, like, objectively, maybe there is a lot going on, but I could be biased, being a huge Reverend fan and having sold my one Reverend last year, my Mercalli 5, and sort of knowing I was quite happily going to pick up maybe a 4-string Reverend next. You know, I'd been thinking about the decision, thinking about the Watt player, obviously. And then I think because I've been getting on so great with my Bronkhoff Bronco, I've perhaps been happy to get a 34-inch scale Reverend first. And then maybe look at like a Dub King or a Watt player in a few months' time. And yeah, I have to say I'm extremely tempted by this triad. I really do think you get the you can get quite a hot version of the sort of PJ best of both worlds. You five-way switching between the three pickups as well.
I like that. That's versatility to the max right there.
Yeah, it is. It is for sure. And I think as well, you know, the sort of three pickup configuration is not something that we see all too commonly. I mean, it's the most noticeable thing about the triad, isn't it? But I think smorgasbord, yes, but a ton of useful features and facets probably also yes. You know, and I think because my two main use long scale basses at the moment are both P basses, I think this might bridge me, pun intended, nicely back into sort of jazz town.
So the two others that you have are a Squire classic vibe 70s, right?
Yes, correct. Yeah. With Aguilar four P60Js.
And the other one is a PJ, right? That Sparkle Surf Green PJ.
Exactly. Yeah, the Pearl Surf Pearl P Bass Deluxe Active Special. So that is a PJ, and it's a fabulous bass. To be honest, I've been using my Classic Vibe a little more lately. I had had some work done on it, which I'm sure I mentioned by T-Side Guitar Tech a few weeks back, and he sanded down the neck for me, and it literally, without exaggerating, has come back with a brass nut and a sanded neck, and literally feels like a 2 grand bass now.
Yeah.
It's like it has received the mods that open up the world from Classic Vibe into a bass sort of far more than the sum of its parts. So I've been having a fabulous time with it.
It's kind of testament to the Squire range of things. Dear listener, I know I bang on about Squire a lot, but I still can't believe sort of the value for money that you get out of Squire when they're so easy to put very simple mods on. Like, all we're talking about here is sanding the neck, changing the nut, a little pickup upgrade. And because they're actually Fender, you know, it's very easy to mod these things. I know there are countless other affordable companies you could potentially mod, but there's something about having a little bit of the heritage there with the, you know, that you've got something that's based on in this case, a 70s P bass. You know, they also do 60s jazz basses, or whether it's a bound 60s telly or you know, a 50s Strat. You know, they've got all the iconic things affordable that just need a little push over the line, and they can feel substantially more value.
Absolutely, yeah. And I, you know, this certainly isn't my first time saying it on the pod, but I think with Squire in particular, we've really gotten some good value out of the last sort of 2-3 years in terms of their releases, like delving into the Paranormal range, the sort of newer Classic Vibe models, the Contemporary range. I think, like you say, I think it's really completely okay to still in this day be into the sort of iconic body shapes and appointments, and why wouldn't you, if you're on a budget
yeah.
why wouldn't you want a piece of the pie? And I think one thing more budget instruments afford you in regards to mods is I think it can lessen the guilt of kind of taking out and swapping in I feel like it feels like less of a risk if you haven't got, you know, a 1,200 pound slab in front of you in terms of what you've just bought. Do you know what I mean?
I totally agree.
Yeah. I feel like, to be honest, even with something like the Triad, I feel like I'd be a little slower to kind of consider swap outs. not only because obviously I'm into, not only because I happen to be genuinely into sort of all of the sort of parts and hardware that a brand like Reverend does, but it just seems easier on a, you know, £300-400.
It's acceptable. Instrument. It's acceptable on a Squire. It's almost what you're expected to do if you get a Squire, but play properly.
I used to work with an amazing guitarist called Darren Dempsey. I used to work with him in the store I worked in Dublin. An extremely creative guitarist, just one of those players who would do unfathomable things with pedals you thought you knew, that type of player. And I used to hear him, every guitar he would sell, outside of sort of people he already knew, he would always say, you know, this guitar is a blank canvas for you. And he was the person I knew who really pushed mods the most. And he literally was on the shop floor taking the guitar off the hook on the wall. And I thought it was a really good good outlook to be kind of getting into maybe newer players' heads from the outset. You know, is this isn't the be all end all of this instrument. You know, think of this as a canvas for you to put some more paint on with any mods you want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I think, to be honest, it's the reason that I still always come back to that 60s jazz bass is because that jazz bass has been 100 different things to me. You know, it's had 4 or 5 different pickup changes, scratch plate changes. I've changed the bridge, the hardware entire. I've sanded the neck, you know, things. Mm-hmm. I've re-lacquered the neck, you know.
And it certainly is why I think so many of us do come back to kind of the bigger brand and the sort of iconic models, isn't it? Mods are inherently that bit easier to sort of just drop in, as opposed to if we go with quirky for both instrument and mod.
Guitar Nerds are teaming up with Music Nomad, and I really think, nerds, you need to check out musicnomadcare.com. We've spoken about all their wonderful guitar maintenance products on the podcast, and I really can't emphasize how important it is to look after your gear and how easy Music Nomad make that for you with things like their how-to advice center and their setup hub. Music Nomad have been around for a little over 10 years, and in that time they've become one of the most recognized brands for guitar tech gear. They're available worldwide in every guitar store you can think to name, and it's for a good reason. All their products are professional grade quality. Every tool and even the cases the tools come in are designed for proper, rugged, on the road use. Make sure you check out what all the buzz is around Music Nomad, as they are redefining and raising the bar for equipment care. Learn more at musicnomadcare.com or follow them on social media with @musicnomadcare. Yeah, exactly. But the thing with Squire is that it seems to be expanding. Like, of course, I'm going to talk about the classic vibe range a lot because that's the stuff that appeals to me. But if I step outside of just my sort of personal bias with the range, I can't believe how good Squire have been doing with the contemporary series recently. And I'm not just talking about bass here. I think on guitars they do things like the contemporary Strat Special, where you're getting angled Strat pickups in different positions, so they're all angled like a bridge pickup. You've got two right next to each other in the bridge position, so almost in a humbucking position, and one in the neck. You get a baked maple neck, and you get kind of cool, unique, original finishes that you don't see on other things, as well as stuff like cupcake knobs. And we're still talking about a £350 instrument that's there for you to mod and turn into whatever you want. But what I mean is, it doesn't just have to be the predictable vintage styled things that you might, you know, mod, which I guess tends to be the type of instrument you'd see modded a lot. There are a whole bunch of super cool things. Like, I keep thinking about the Starcaster, the contemporary active Starcaster.
Of course, it's a HH, isn't it?
Yeah, it comes with active SQR pickups, but you know, you shove a couple of EMGs in there, that's a completely legitimate instrument for
absolutely
for that sort of application.
Yeah, I mean, there's a HH Strat, I'm pretty sure, in there with a Floyd Rose as well. This is awesome. Yeah. This is awesome. We're going back to early 2000s metal Strats. They may not be for me, but honestly, like, I love seeing that. I just love seeing, I don't want to say outside the box, because it's still a Fender Strat, ultimately. But yeah, I don't know, just that reopening to sort of outside the box design within iconic shapes. I sound like I'm a bloody branding person now for Fender Squire. I'm not, just disclaimer, but yeah, still a big fan. And I think with it's funny you touched on contemporary active as well. I think it is a fantastic range for those of us who are into mods, but also like the idea of that work sort of being done for us.
Yeah,
I think I think that's another nice thing about picking up an instrument that's sort of a twist on a classic, as it were, is sometimes you can kind of have the mods done for you, which is always a nice touch as well. I guess a bit like maybe PJ basses in a way, you know.
Yeah, and but certainly in the case of a shell pink Strat with a black Floyd Rose style.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and all the black hardware dropped in. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, very cool. Mm. Do you think with the Reverend Triads, do you think is that your favourite bass in the range, or is it just because, you know, of course, dear listener, Reverend may well be very available to you in the States right now, but in the UK at the moment, there ain't too much of the basses kicking around, certainly in shops.
Do you mean on the scene?
Well, I guess, retailers in the UK right now seem to have Watt Plowers, mm-hmm, and the occasional Dub King, and mm-hmm, that's about it. So none of the 34-inch scale Reverends seem to be around at the moment. So I guess my question is, if you at the moment in the UK, if you type Reverend onto Reverb, the only one that's going to come up is that Triad.
Indeed.
Used. So, yeah. So do you think if you weren't limited by that, is the Triad the thing you'd go for?
Oh, I don't know if it is, to be honest. And that's not taking away from genuinely really liking the Triad.
Sure.
Like, I'm not brand blind in sort of really seriously considering it. It is because there's sort of genuine things I can really see working into, you know, my playing and kind of upcoming gigs I know I might have, that type of thing. Because I, you know, potentially in the coming months I have some heavier gigs as well as the sort of function stuff that I'm more used to. So that's a super nice thing to consider with the Triad in particular. I remain a big Mercalli stan. Stan is a Gen Z word for when you support something, Joe. Sorry, I forgot how much older you are than me just for a moment.
I did not know what you were saying there, right.
Did you actually not know what Stan means?
No, I did not. I did not.
Ah, okay.
I'm barely a millennial.
True, you barely snuck in there. I think the Decision P and the Mercalli 4, so the 4-string version of the 5 that I had, I am still massive fans of those. So both of those, you have a reverse P and you have a J position. The Mercalli 4, of course, you have sort of, what are they called? Are they big brick? I think they're big brick pickups, but Music Man style.
Yeah.
And then the Decision P, you have the, what are they called? They're the blade type.
Yeah, it's a
Jazz Bomb and a P blade. That's what it is. So those are two. Those are the two I've kind of always been a fan of. You still have your sort of, I suppose, loosely P styled, you know, body with pick guard, that sort of thing. And just amazing sounding as well. Like the Mercalli in particular, the sort of responsiveness of the tone knob makes it such a versatile bass. I do like the slightly sharper touch of that reverse P as well. And again, just across the board with Reverend, just rock solid feel and tuning thanks to the Hipshot hardware.
And I guess the bridge humbucker makes it a little bit more versatile, well, or at least gives you access to some sort of super articulate heavy tones.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely it does. Now, for me, I sort of have that looked after by the deluxe Act of P that I have, but with anything Reverend, because of the different body wood, because you have the Carina body, I do think you kind of have tonally a different approach there, which I love the idea of having in the bass arsenal, as it were.
Right, I see. Mm.
Do you know something really funny? I actually forgot this until just when you asked me about other models. I have mixed feelings about this. I actually saw my old Mercalli 5 on Reverb as well the other day.
The actual one?
The actual one. So the guy I sold it to is obviously moved on, I think, to something else, Reverend. But yeah, so our friend Joe of fellow bass playing fame linked me to it and made some joke about here's your ex-husband about the bass. And I kind of laughed and looked at it and I thought, hang on, there cannot be many, Midnight Black Mercalli 5s in the UK, particularly as you just said. There's definitely, I feel, a few less basses than there are guitars on the land. Mm. And then, yeah, of course, looked at the serial in the images and was like, no way. He's selling it for more than I sold it for
which is the burn.
So yeah, anyway, it's my first time seeing that. I'm sure that's a moment many of us gearheads have, but definitely my first time seeing my actual instrument resold. So it's okay. I'm very committed to a four string Reverend neck, so
good. That's the sensible choice.
Yeah, it's not like seeing the ex at the club with their new person type of thing. Have you had any more thoughts on any Reverend Poitras's for yourself?
Isotope and Native Instruments have teamed up to create the start to finish bundle that home recording guitar nerds have been waiting for. Plus, you, dear listener, get an extra 10% off with Guitar Nerds by using discount code NERDS10 at the checkout on isotope.com. From the creative spark to the final touch, their new bundles include pretty much everything you could possibly need, which is great because it's far too easy to sink hundreds of pounds and a big chunk of your time into just picking up random plugins. The Music Production Suite 4.1 and Complete 13 bundle contains over 30 intelligent mixing, mastering and repair plugins, 65 premium instruments, 20 plus expansions and over 35,000 sounds. And if that's a bit basic for you, they've also bundled Music Production Suite 4.1 with Complete 13 Ultimate, which gives you everything that makes Complete 13 incredible, plus a colossal library of added synths, sampled instruments and effects, 115 plus premium instruments and effects, 39 native instruments expansions and over 65,000 sounds. Whew. It sounds like a lot. It is. It's very good, very comprehensive. And as we've come to expect from Isotope, it's very good value. If you're looking to get into home recording, I cannot recommend it more highly. And if you're already into home recording, it really is the one-stop shop for making what you do sound better. This podcast is entirely treated and produced using Isotope plugins, and Native Instruments have been responsible for almost every synth or sample you've heard on our Guitar Nerds jingles. Check out their great new bundles on isotope.com or follow links in the description of this podcast and use discount code NERDS10 at the checkout for 10% off anything in the Isotope arsenal.
I thought about that triad as well, but I've decided to step back from all purchasing new guitars at the moment. I'm focusing on effects pedals at the moment for a couple of reasons, partially because I'm having a custom shop built by Moore Guitars. Dear listener, you might remember us talking about them a couple of years ago. I had Moore Guitars on the podcast, M-O-A-R guitars, if you want to.
Different from the pedals.
Yes. Not M-O-O-E-R, like the pedals. M-O-A-R. A lovely Danish Copenhagen-based guitar custom shop that make fantastic instruments. The whole thing with them is they're very, very slim and super lightweight. incredible construction. And they do an instrument, a guitar, which has also occasionally been made in bass form, which is what I've ordered, called the Wayfarer, because it is Wayfarer thin, which is a 335 style instrument, but insanely thin. Like, you can pick it up with one hand, as he does from the bottom of the body, and show you just how thin it is.
I'm on the pictures. Website. Oh God!
Yeah, they're really cool.
They're
some
really
cool
beautiful.
The Wayfarer for me, I just think it's a remarkably cool looking instrument. So I have I've commissioned a 34 inch scale Wayfarer bass with three B90s of his own construction.
Yes, and, three
bass six switching. Except for the bass cut, I don't need that. So just as in just three switches for each pickup,
yep,
rather than,
yep,
any sort of blending.
Beautiful. Okay.
And then, like a trapeze style bridge, which is probably, mm-hmm, a bad idea, but I have to complete the look. I can't have just a normal bass bridge on something that looks this cool. I've got to have the full tail piece.
I feel like you'd struggle with all regular appointments on any instrument that you were commissioning. I feel like that would be one of the harder things you'd have to overcome in your life, yes, if you were to be challenged with that.
Exactly.
Yeah, God, these are stunning. I feel like you've surely shown me this at some point before, but
probably.
Wow. What are you going for?
Well, if dear listener, if you do go to the Instagram, Moore Guitars on Instagram, and you scroll back through, you'll find the bass that inspired this, which has already been built by someone else who also had the Wayfarer with three P90 style pickups in a 34 inch scale. I have gone for the same wood. I've gone for a Wenge, so it's going to be a very dark wood bound. The model that you see in the images, he's gone for like gold pickups and gold hardware. I wouldn't go for that. I'm going for a simple nickel on everything. Still having I'm having cream binding on mine. But also, crucially, the other thing I'm having is no F-holes.
Okay.
Just to help with anything. Not that something this thin should really be having much of a feedback concerns. I just really like the look of no F-holes on these sort of large style basses.
So. Yeah. So is that going to be, is it going to be solid or chambered or?
It's going to be hollow.
Right, hollow. Okay.
I just don't want it to feedback too much, so I'm not going to.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have those F-holes on it. So yeah, mm-hmm, so that is started finally 18 months ago. I put down my first deposit on it, but I did have the option to make some payments in the last 18 months. I haven't, and it's quite expensive. So
I can see that from the website. But I mean, this is a work of art, really, by the level of work gone into it.
Yeah, they're really cool. They're really cool. But of course, he's come back to me and been like, finally getting around to yours. I have it done by July. And I'm like, that is not a lot of time to get this amount of money. So hence, I am not going to buy anything else for a little while. I'm going to need to take it rather easy on the purchasing instruments front. But I'm really excited to get that. I think it'll be super cool.
We'll see
how it turns out.
His Instagram is a thing of beauty. I'm gonna leave that tab open for a little scroll after hours, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, they are very good. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to that. But it doesn't mean that I'm not gonna try a few pedals, because of course I'm always on the lookout really for three things. I found the three things that I'm always on the lookout for: new compressors, new transparent-ish drive pedals, mm-hmm, for bass, and of course I'm constantly on a bit of a fuzz search. So there are a few things I'm looking at this week.
Would you call your fuzz search a fuzz circuit if you're always on it? you're meant to laugh. It was the worst pun of the week.
Yes.
Come on.
Yeah,
okay. You're going to have to edit out that silence. That was harrowing. Jesus Christ.
No,
it's only the two of us here. There's no buffer to my terrible puns.
It was a great pun. I appreciate it.
Buffer was
massively
a pun too. God damn it. My talent is wasted.
I know. Well, yeah, so, well, I haven't found anything new for my fuzz search at the moment this week. Last week I was speaking about going to see Sang Freud play.
Oh, you did, or you will be?
I did. So I saw them at Portals.
Okay.
And Charlie Barnes, the guitarist in Sang Freud, who's also the guitarist in Chowder Coup, absolutely, it was incredible. And I was talking about how he was getting loads of his tone, was playing a Tele into a Proco Rat into a Fender Twin. With a bunch of amp reverb. He was, Charlie Barnes was at the wedding, in fact. So I had a chat with him about that, about, like, you know, just wow. Like, I've never heard anyone, you know, make a rat sound that good. I've never cared about rats. I've just written them off the whole way through. Never liked the sound of them. Never heard anyone make a rat sound that good. And his guitar tone was amazing. I got to stand right in front of him when they played. Some of the best guitar tone I have ever heard ever in all of my life. I loved every minute of his playing. So spoke to him about it and being like, you know, how did you come up? Like, what? Why that? Why did he make that decision? You know, how? What made you think to partner this together to get the sounds that you do? Because he's a very Johnny Greenwood-esque guitarist, dear listener, if you for that sort of thing. So I was like, I don't know how you came to this decision. He was like, oh, I think I found that pedal on the street or at a car boot or something. I've just owned it for years. That's it. There's no...
Always the bloody way.
There's no thought into it. He's just like, yeah, maybe I should get something else. And I was like, no. Never change.
No, absolutely not.
Never change. But yeah, but it made me start thinking about rat pedals. And a couple of listeners reached out on the group. Dear podcast listener, do join the Facebook group for our discussion. Guitarist group
place
on Facebook, if you wanna make suggestions or just get involved in the discussion. So a few people reached out to me and made discussions. One of the made suggestions. One of the suggestions was the Commodoro.
Mm-hmm.
I got it right this time. Me and Naomi were talking before the podcast. I was like, yes, there's this new pedal by Commodoro.
It's an absolute, not even dad, but a granddad moment, I would say.
What have we got here with this Commodoro? Commodoro. I'm gonna have some of this pita bread and hummus.
Yeah, rat bass.
Foo Fighters.
Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Exactly. Yes, so I was thinking through to this. I almost said, I'm going to go with Commodoro. I'm just going to do it because I'm going to naturally say it anyway. So I'll just nip it in the bud now.
It's like the musician's mistake. If you do it three times and make it a thing, then is it really a mistake?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So we're talking about the Commodoro rat bass.
We are talking about the Commodoro rat bass. So there were a couple of iterations of these that I was kind of linked to. And if you go to CommodoroPedales.com, dear listener, you can check out all their stuff. Spanish company. They do a few different things. All of their pedals look really good. And the rat bass, they do in two versions, I think. They do a double pedal and a single pedal version.
Look at that. I hadn't seen the double rat bass.
I don't need two. It's just a second one sort of on there. So I'm fine with the one.
Oh, sure. Yeah, awesome. So it gives you your two. You can have two setups. Toggle on, toggle off.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Cool. You can stack them. But, you know, I probably only need one. So it's really good. So, of course, as is standard, what's the one thing that makes it a rat bass rather than a rat? It's got a blend.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great. So you've got essentially a four control version of the Proco Rat. I'm not sure they can call it the rat bass. I really don't think that's...
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was a bit surprised as well. Yeah, well, I mean, maybe this will be one of the cool ones that if you pick it up now, you'll have to pick up the Spanish,
ladies and gentlemen, the Spanish. They never were one to shy away from a fight, and in this case, I'm sure a cease and desist is well on the way. But
absolutely, yeah. What would it become? What would the safe name be?
You can call it anything. Like I've got a rat here called the Moose from Bright Onion. Pedals. So, you know, you've got all of those options. There are loads of different things. So what did Fuzz Rocious do? They changed theirs. I think they did get a cease and desist for their King Rat. I think they changed theirs to their King Cat instead.
Makes sense. Reminds me of, what was the JHS one? Was it the Pink Panther?
Yes, I have a Pink Panther from before it became Lucky Cat.
That was it. Pink Panther to Lucky Cat. Mm. Indeed, I was saying as well, I'm an enjoyer of the really just minimal typography artwork on this pedal.
Yeah.
You were kind of saying, is it artwork? And I think, yes, it is.
Because it's just text, no, it's, but it looks great.
Yeah, you know, because I'm a huge... I first got into, like, you know, sort of... Earthquaker were one of the first brands where I was like, wow, oh my God, pedal artwork is awesome. And then, you know, saw Walrus and saw Walrus Audio and then saw, you know, sort of Zvex's incredible hand-painted enamel. And yeah, I think the best of both worlds is nice and super simplistic. Really does it for me as well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it definitely looks cool. Nice touch. I like the sort of simple, minimal white pedal. It looks great. Mm-hmm. Have you ever used Rats much? Proco Rats ever been on your radar?
Yeah, yeah. I have one. I have one on my pedal shelf here still. It is a Rat. Yeah, it's a Rat 2. Rat 2. And what I did, I haven't played it in a while because I haven't really had a project that has needed it, but in my old band, Bitch Falcon, which was quite grungy sort of stuff, what I loved doing was stacking the Rat on top of other stuff.
Oh, really? So, what, so yeah. Would you replace the low end after the Rat had sucked it out, sort of thing?
This was early days of understanding pedals. I understood the fundamentals of signal flow, but not much beyond that. And I mean, I don't know how much that has improved since, to be honest, but I'd like to think I'm better now. So my trick, big quote unquote, was to use the Rat with an octaver, actually, when I wanted real nasal, real gross, like sort of sound. I could almost get this really gross, squarey sound with using it with, oh God, of all things, an Electro-Harmonix octave multiplexer.
Oh,
which
wow.
Was, yeah, lo-fi and warbly as hell.
Yeah, that's like, I want a lower note, but I don't mind which one.
It's one of the better reviews of that pedal I think you could make. Yeah, so, you know, typical me, kind of low budget, lo-fi. But it was cool. It was. I really liked sort of tacking in the Rat. I kind of forget. So in this case, it was a three-piece band where the guitarist herself had an incredible array of pedals and very broad-sounding pedals as well. So Lizzie would use a lot of... she would use an awful lot of reverb, an awful lot of delay, like quite wide bandwidth sort of effects. Right. And I quite liked how you could really just like stomp in some poke with the Rat.
I see.
So yeah, definitely not an always on for me. But I think if and when I kind of am in heavier projects again, which I have some planned for the near future, I think the Rat will be going back on the board what I compartmentalize in my brain as a true effect, as in an effect on top of my always on sound.
Right, yeah.
To stomp on for sections.
It can
never
be your drive sound, but it could be a cool, weird alternative to that.
Yeah, exactly. I'll never, with all respect to Proco, I don't think I'll ever consider any form of the Rat sort of a very bassy sort of driver distortion for me. I think it'll always be sort of higher end gross thing, which I love. I like having that to stomp in.
Hmm. Yes, I see. Well, I'm definitely.
Have you? What's been your history? Did you just tell me that you've never used it?
I've never used one. I do own one. I own two. I have two. I don't know why. I'm not sure when the second one arrived.
So Joe Branton. I have a collection of them. I've just never plugged them in. No.
Oh, and of course I have the Bright Onion mousse as well.
You do.
So
yeah, sure.
Technically, I have a few, but. But yeah, I don't think I've ever really found the right application for them, so I've never really used them seriously. I think potentially at one point a Proco Rat may have made it onto an old baseboard, but I don't think I really used
wasn't
it.
Wasn't a big one.
No, it wasn't anything that I really... I think it made it onto an early board where I was probably just trying to put as many pedals on my board as possible. Do you know what I mean?
Like pop in there, yeah.
Yeah, we all do that in early... When you're in weird bands where big
When you're in weird bands, yeah, and it's okay for bassists to be a little bit insecure. We are faced with many big guitar boards, a lot of us.
Yeah.
You gotta size up. No, I fully get you. Yeah, I think maybe we're singing from the same hymn sheet here, that it's fantastic on bass when used discerningly.
Yes, yeah.
That sounds a bit highbrow. I think when used right, it's awesome on bass, but it's such a shouter of a pedal on bass. Sometimes it can be awesome to just let us do the low work and let it really shine on guitar.
Yeah, absolutely. I am actually, however, interested in what a normal one would sound like for guitar. Just because I thought it was such an incredible sound that Charlie Barnes had, and it probably was just the fact that he's a great guitarist, but I do want to explore that. So I was thinking about, I was looking around, like, what's the best rat, like, normal rats out there, rat-style pedals? Because, of course, last year was the year of the rat. Dear listener, I appreciate it. If you're obviously more into effects, you probably are oversaturated with rat clones after last year. But I never really got involved in that, so I'm doing it now. but the one that really stands out for me, made by a fantastic company, and also I just love the simplicity of it, and I trust the brand to make a really good sounding version of it, Tate FX. They do their Rodent 308, which looks great. I love the simplicity of it. I really like the Tate FX logo. It's dead simple, but it's just the Tate FX logo and the name Rodent 308 on a black pedal with these huge oversized like three controls for the pedal. So I know that he makes high quality stuff. I don't understand any of the jargon about resistors and capacitors that I find companies like Tate FX and Thorpe FX often, you know, preach about on their write-ups for their pedals. Rightly so. It just means nothing to me. But the fact that they've been mentioned suggests that they're things that are good. So you've got me there.
Yeah, this is real pro talk.
Welcome to the number one guitar podcast. I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Rodent 308 looks great.
It does. Yeah, it's superb looking. Again, yeah, funnily also not unlike the rat bass. Yeah. You know, for all your amazing pronunciation, it's just somehow didn't stick in my head. How strange. Yeah, also quite simplistic. I suppose the rat itself is... Oh, I managed to turn on a demo in my ears there. That was very disconcerting. Oh, nice. Yeah, it's gorgeous looking. Very into that.
Yeah, I'd like it's to have cool. A listen. I might get one. But there's another pedal that I actually did get this week. Let me see if I can get it. Here it is. In fact... I just got a text message from the very fella who makes them, Thorpe FX, sent me this week their The Fat General, which is their compressor, and it is extremely good. Now, it's another one of the pedals that Thorpe FX make a bunch of stuff with as collaborations with Dan Coggins, and in this case, again, it's another almost update or reimagining of Dan Coggins' old pedal. So this is an evolution of the critically acclaimed OTC 201 compressor. It's dead simple. You've just got a treble control, sustain, a balance, which is exactly what I want, and then a blend switch that's just a switch between blend and juicy. But it is a dead simple compressor. And the thing I really like about it, that I really look for in compressors, is it's very difficult to make this not sound good, which is handy. It means you can not know what you're doing and probably still end up with a good sound, which is very useful.
While that's very useful and very attractive, can you help me to understand what the balance does? It's not a term I've seen on every compressor.
I think it's just a blend.
Sorry. I thought you meant that there was a... I thought you were saying there was a balance and a blend.
Oh, right. There is like a switch that says blend or juicy.
It's a blend switch.
But then the balance rotary, I think, is just bringing in your clean sync signal alongside the compressed sound.
Sure.
Okay. Which is great because that means I can actually make this incredibly transparent if I want. I can make it like a really subtle... evening of my tone, out of my tone, or I can really pump it and get that really sort of sucky like 80s overcompressed sound. And I really like that this pedal does both very well. Like a lot of compressors tend to be one or the other, and they tend to try to be one or the other, like not unintentionally. They're either aiming for, hey, this is a really transparent compressor. It's a compressor that you won't even know it's on, but it's on. You know, that tends to be the thing that multiband compressors want to market themselves as, you know.
Yes, like, absolutely.
This will just make everything more even. And then you've got the other side of compressors that are like, this is a super effects compressor that, you know, will make you sound like, you know, every note that you're playing is sucking the air out of the room. And that's, both of those are kind of desirable sounds for me. So it's really nice to have a pedal that can do both, but also just, I don't know, just sound naturally great, just really articulate and really good, and kind of do the job just with that one treble control. It's like sparkliness. It's kind of like doing the job of a bit of a preamp as well as a compressor. Like I used to use an MXR microamp a lot as well a compressor, and just have those two things on at the front of my chain or whichever way. But yeah, just after straight after the bass. And I kind of feel like this does a little bit of both. Nice to have something that's giving me a little bit of an EQ tweak early on in my chain.
Yeah. I think a simple compressor is absolutely invaluable. And if it's one which, like all things Torpy, is beautifully built with, I think you probably just alluded to it, but yeah, another builder who certainly seems to pride himself on all of the parts, internal and external, that are kind of used to build it. I think, it's great to not have to overcomplicate things and just have a super simple, really easily tweakable, transparent comp in your chain.
Yeah, absolutely. And for me, it's absolutely an always-on compressor, which is what I'm always looking for. I've done things where I've had like a couple of compressors on my board before, where like I'd have one maybe for more effects-y style stuff, like one that's going to give me like all the harmonics and things like that, and then one normal one. But honestly, like just switching between them can be a bit of a faff. Like you get some real nasty sounds if you accidentally, you know, if you end up with both on at the same time. It's just, they're awkward. It's awkward to have two compressors on a board. So I do want something that can just be on all the time, but maybe with a little subtle adjustment for a track can do both jobs really well. I've not really found anything that can do that until now. I've been really happy with the Boss BC1X. I've been really happy with the Analog Man bi-compressor, the Empress. What is the Empress one called? It's on my shelf. The Compressor Mark II.
Oh, yeah.
They've been really, really good, but none of them can do both things. They're very much one or the other. And, you know, I think the Empress Compressor Mark II can probably do both things, but it also does both things with like seven or eight rotaries. And that's too much for me to get my head around.
Yeah. Like the Empress is so beautiful sounding, but yeah, exactly like you say, there's a lot there, and there's a lot both in rotaries and in kind of board real estate. Go on.
No, go on.
No, just it's handy that while being built like a tank, the Thorpey pedals mostly manage to still be nice and compact and kind of take up one U of sort of board space, which I love.
Yeah, and I just need those simple controls. And dear listener, I appreciate not everyone does. I know that's a personal thing. But my problem when things like the Empress compressor, which has, what, 6-8 rotaries on there, I am constantly thinking, is there something I should have tweaked here? Yeah, what can I change? Does this sound bad? Is there a way that this could sound better? Should I be messing with this? Should I have that control there? Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Sometimes the best thing you can do for your pedal board is limit your decisions and limit your controls. And I don't know, I don't mean to make it sound so binary as, you know, less knobs mean more creativity, but sometimes you can, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Maybe as an exercise, I should like build a board with the least controls possible. It's just something I kind of believe in, is having comprehensive effects is absolutely awesome. But yeah, I absolutely could get lost sometimes in decision fatigue about settings and recall and such.
Exactly. I do specifically that. So we'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I'll get on with the Fat General over the next week. I'll report back.
Do, episode. Yeah. I'm curious about it as well.
Yes, yeah. Well, it turned up today, so I played around with it a bunch today, and I'm still in that honeymoon period of being like, this sounds great.
Sure, so, yeah. Give it a few plays.
Exactly. We'll see.
Very cool.
We will see. Now, I realize I've been asked a couple of times for an update on the baseball. Because I said this year I was going to get into baseball. I decided to support the Philadelphia Phillies.
You're actually talking about the sport. This is how stuck in pun mode I am.
Sorry, literally,
I'm like, what pedal's this?
I don't mean the electro-harmonics.
First we had the pizza slice, now we got the baseball.
I don't mean the electro-harmonics baseballs, which is their Q-tron pedal. I actually mean Major League Baseball.
Awesome.
The American sport. I said I was going to get into it, and I was going to make references on the podcast. But honestly, dear listener, First off, I've been very busy. These last 3 weeks have been insane. And so what I did, I was like, well, I'm gonna get into this. Because, you know, I've know plenty about football. I follow football. I lose money regularly on betting websites for football.
And you're a man of your word.
So. Exactly.
Yeah. So why not lose money on keeping your word?
You know? Well, exactly. So I thought I know my way around a sport. I'll check out baseball today. I have no idea what's happening. No idea. I started trying to follow it like more than the scores today. I was watching some clips. If you go to Major League Baseball seems to have its own website, like an MLB.com sort of a website. And they show little clips with little news articles. And they're like, it looks like the Phillies won something recently. And they've got a thing where they're like, what a way to win it. Down to the final strike, the Phillies walked it off in the bottom of the 10th. I don't know what they're saying. And the little video clip, I don't know, it looks like someone drops a ball for a bit. Is that the thing? Was that the help? Was that the Dodgers defense messing up? I think that's what that was. I don't really know. The Phillies look happy. I wish I'd put money on this game. I haven't. So, you know, that's it. Dear listener, if you can give me some sort of brief, I don't want to go into depth about it. I just need to start off lightly. What on earth happens? How does it work? How does the game happen? You know, that's what I need to know. So yeah. if you want to educate me, dear listener, that would be fantastic. It would take a lot of the pressure off of me having to do any research of my own, really.
Yeah. And just pretend and lie and celebrate at the risk of celebrating at the wrong moment in the game match.
Is it a
baseball game or a baseball? Baseball lives somewhere along the same lines as cricket in my sports spectrum.
But cricket, I understand.
What?
It's easy. Are you
being serious?
No, I have no idea what's happening.
Yeah, no, cricket is absolutely far afield for me. And I live next to a cricket stadium, so I feel a bit conscious of this because there's always cricket fans floating about and cheering, and I'd love to be able to eavesdrop because I'm a total nosy parker. So yeah, I sort of can relate to your want to get into baseball.
There you go. Yeah, I've also recently discovered that Sky Bet, which is the betting app I use, doesn't seem to do baseball. So I need to find something else where I can bet on baseball games. So I also need education, dear listener, on what sort of bets to take. Because I don't know what I should, I don't know what sort of things, it works.
What's the Betfred of baseball?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I need to know. So educate me, dear listener. And in the meantime, because, you know, we're coming to the end of this podcast, but I want to leave everyone with this, including you, Naomi. Recently, I've been getting really into mid-80s, the mid-80s British meat war of the advertising world.
Go on.
Okay, so
yeah, this is cool. This is new to me.
So so I'm ripping this from another podcast. Back in 2018, Top Flight Time Machine did a whole run of stuff on this, but I've only just listened to the episode. So, dear listener, you know, go and listen to them. They talk about this in depth. But in the mid 80s, there was a war between British meat factions. So the British Lamb Association funded an advert that went out on British TV. And in response, the British Pork Society also funded an advert that went out on British TV. And one thing that's clear, both of these groups of people are completely batshit crazy. Because these adverts are very, very unusual and incredibly creepy. But I thoroughly recommend watching them. The lamb advert is lambs trying to be sexy. That's what lamb's gone for. 30-second advert. Just trying to make lamb chops look sexy. Whereas the pork industry, they've gone for family values. Watching those play out, I'm going to put links to both adverts in the description of this podcast. Tell me what you think next week, dear listener and Naomi.
They are
quite something.
Would you say for fans of Black Mirror type of thing, in regards to how someone who, like myself and I assume yourself, not the biggest fan of the meat industry might feel after watching them? Are they the dystopia of wild marketing of the time?
Well, the lamb advert is pretty crazy. It's just it's very quick. It's lots of flashing images, and it's like a woman making lamb chops in the kitchen, and she's like, "The lamb chops, they're ever so easy, they're ever so quick. Chop, 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 chops." That's the whole ad. It's about 14 seconds. Like, she's just saying that, and then there's just this bloke's face at the end, and he just goes, "Chops." Like, that's the whole ad. It's 14 seconds long. It's insane. It's amazing. I love it. But the only thing that's better than that is the pork advert, which is longer format. And it's very much like, this is at a dining table, with family and friends round for dinner. And it starts off with the guy standing, lording over his family and friends. And he's like, "My wife's got what it takes. Arthur's got plenty. Paul's got plenty. Plenty to go around. Good value for money, pork." And it goes on like that. And he reiterates a few times. He's like, "They've got plenty, my wife. She's got what it takes."
It is definitely the type of person who, A, can only be called Barry or Gary. and B, started referring to
my wife. She's got what it takes.
The beginning of the wedding day, if not before, and yes. Never uttered her name again.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
She hasn't had a name in years.
No, it's the creepiest ad. Like, I assume sort of later that day the bodies were buried underneath the house. Like, it's very creepy. But I'll post both ads. Tell me what you think, dear listener, because it's really weird. And anyway, on that rather odd note,
join us on the Patreon.
Yes, we're finishing this podcast. Going over to the Patreon, where you can become a Patreon supporter for as little as $1 a month. At the dollar tier, you get this episode ad-free and early. $5 gets you access to the Patreon special and our back catalogue. $10 gets you the lot, plus I'll sing you my thanks at the end of every episode. Find us on your favourite social media platforms. Join the Guitarners group on Facebook. Get involved in our weekly discussion. Check out late 80s meat adverts in the UK. Thanks for listening. You've been lovely. We've been the Guitar Nerds. Farewell.
Goodbye.
I'm gonna sing you all about my Patreons. Yeah, so I am going to sing you all about my Patreons. Yeah, they're really lovely people and they have a fantastic rear end. Yeah, Chris Franklin, Andy Fry, and Barry Grisby. All right, yeah, oh. Patriots upon us like a guitar. Yes, it is. Each one of them is so lovely, and I want to take them. Shabu ke la bu ke ya la ba ka bu ji wo.